over the class working on the second half of the book of Acts. So before we get into our class, let's have a word of prayer, please. Our Father in heaven, we come before thee and we are so thankful for the blessings you've given us. We're so thankful for the blessing of gathering together to study your word. We're so thankful for the blessing of your word. We pray that you would watch over us as we study this morning, that we would be edified, that we would learn from your truths. Be with us and bless us. In Jesus we pray. Amen. Okay, so we're talking about Moses, and we're following his life, and we've spent a lot of time talking about him in the book of Exodus. And he has led the children of Israel out of Egypt. They have crossed the Red Sea. They are on their way down to Mount Sinai to get instruction from Jehovah and to get their new law, what is going to guide the nation. And so they are on their way down to Mount Sinai. We saw that already they are complaining. They complained once that they didn't have anything to drink, and so
served offshore. The remaining oil continues to dissipate.
You're listening to USA
Headline. Later, they're in water again. And so they're on their way down. Then we also saw last week where the Amalekites come and attack them. Seems to be unprovoked. And of course they lose, and that's the situation where Moses was there and the battle was going on during the day, and as long as he had his hands up with the staff, the Israelites were winning. And if he got tired and dropped his arms, then they were losing. And so then Joshua and the other gentleman, whose name just escaped me, holds his arms up, and they continue to win. So we saw all of those things so far. So we're coming up to getting close to Sinai. Now, at some point, Moses must have given some instruction or sent a messenger or something. It's not recorded, but we have this really interesting piece here in chapter, get to the right page, chapter 18, where he reconnects with his family. Okay, so Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law. Okay, remember we had talked about that way back when. But he has heard all that God has done for Moses and for the Israelite people, and the Lord brought Israel out of Egypt. And then in verse 2, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back. So Moses had sent his wife and kids back to Jethro at some point. So they weren't there for this portion of the Exodus, for this portion of Moses' life. And so Jethro is now bringing them to him. So at some point, somehow, either Moses called for them, or it was prearranged, or something. But anyway, Jethro is on his way to meet up with them. And it's kind of interesting to me that if you look at three verses here I want to focus on for a second. If you look at verse 6, now he had said to Moses, I, your father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons. So then Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. Okay, so you have a scenario where you've got Moses and the people, and then you've got Jethro coming to meet him, and then Moses, and so they're going to connect. And in verse 10, find my spot. And Jethro said, okay, so they've met, and Jethro said, blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods, for in the very thing in which they behaved proudly, he was above them. Okay? So to me, it's kind of an interesting statement, and it's an interesting, visual in my head. I picture, and there's no way to know exactly how they met because it doesn't say, but I picture in my mind, you've got Moses and all of the Israelites, okay? And there's just a couple of them, right? I mean, estimates, 1 million to 2 million people, right? When you count 600,000 fighting men and then their wives and their children and then they've got all their livestock. I mean, so this is a vast host, right? And I picture in my mind, you know, that early on, Jethro goes, yes, Moses, you go and you deliver your people. Yes, Moses, you go and do this. Yes, Moses, okay, fine. Well, now I picture in my mind Jethro and his family coming like up over a ridge or something and up on the ridge and they look down and they see Israel. Okay. And he really, he gets it. He understands now. He really understands. Until he sees it, it's kind of like an intellectual exercise. Okay, Moses, yes, you go to Egypt and you deliver the people because that's what God wants you to do. I'm a faithful man. I believe in God. God's told you to do this. Go and do this. But then when he sees that, you know, it doesn't really say anything about that, but I could picture the meeting of these two peoples. You know, Jethro and his family and they're, you know, Bedouin traveler type people and they travel in tents and move from spot to spot and then he sees the host of Israel. That had to be just incredible. You know, the first time he sees the nation of Israel. And then Moses and he connect. And then Moses tells him everything that happened in Egypt. And he'd already heard a bunch of this stuff. And so then he says in verse 11, now I know that the Lord is God. Obviously, Jethro believed. Okay, he was a believer. He was a follower of Jehovah. He believed in God. Okay. And now he sees, in essence, the evidence. So it's really interesting to me that Jethro believed before he actually saw the evidence, and then he sees the evidence and he goes, now I get it. Now I totally understand. You know, because he can see, physically see what God has done. And before that, you know, there were other manifestations that I'm sure he saw that helped his belief. But, you know, here, it's just a very interesting connection. Between the two when the families reconnect. I'm sure that was something pretty amazing, actually. You know, could you imagine yourself in that situation if you were to, like, as I picture in my mind, come up onto a ridge and see 1 million people out on the plain in front of you? I mean, that's amazing. And that they're organized and orderly and following Moses. And it's incredible. Jerry. Yeah.
As you come down, you don't have 500,000 people there, but how wide of an area do you need
right.
Right.
Any city like that, where you come up over a ridge and you look down into a plain or a valley or something, you can see the lights of the city, or yeah, that impression it makes.
Or you're landing in an airport.
Yeah.
And at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's
impressive. It really is. Here, I just love Jethro's statement. Now I know. You know, I get it now. You know, I believed, and I am a believer. Wow, I can see it now. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Job got to that same point, didn't he? Yeah. I'm a believer. I understand. I get it. I understand. Now I see it. I see it. Now I know. Yeah. Pretty powerful. So they reconnect. Yeah, Janet. Yeah. And he's looking down. Right. Yeah. The extent of the people. Great phrase. Yeah. Yes, indeed. And he needed Balaam to curse the people so he could prevail. It wasn't going to happen. Yeah. So it's also an interesting point for us that to a certain degree, we believe without seeing also, right? I can't see God's miraculous hand with hail and fire and, you know, locusts and, you know, I don't see that today. I believe, but I do have something I see and I can anchor to and I can believe, you know. So it's kind of similar, but not, it's, you know, anyway, but it's just really interesting to me, you know, belief prior, you know, evidence, more belief, you know, it all goes kind of hand in hand. But I just love that picture in my mind of Jethro coming to meet his son-in-law and going, wow, you know, seeing the host of Israel would have been something. So then they get together, right? And then the last piece in chapter 18, which is pretty interesting, Jethro kind of gets a glimpse into Moses' day, right? You know, if you think about your typical day at work, right? What do you do at work, you know? Or what you did at work in a typical day. You did this, this is your typical day. And it's kind of like Jethro gets to see a typical day, if you will, of Moses' life. And so what is Moses doing all this time with the children of Israel? You know, he's, you know, they're coming to him. What about this? What about this? What do we do here? What do we do here? What do we, you know, constant barrage, in essence, of folks coming to him wanting to know what's going on. And so Jethro kind of sees this, and what does Jethro say about this? What is he sees Moses, and what does he say about Moses himself? Did you read through that part? Yeah. Moses was trying to take care of everything. And Jethro says, you're going to kill yourself. There was another thought I heard over here. Yes, no, maybe. You're going to wear yourself out. You're just going to get worn out. You're going to just burn out real fast. So, you know, this is not good, Moses. So what does Jethro tell him? I just love this whole concept of the older man instructing the younger man. It's just perfect, isn't it? What does Jethro tell him? Here. You're going to wear yourself out, so what does he want him to do? Or what does he recommend that he does? Just exactly that. Delegate, right?
Well, in some way, we kind of work it here in the United States the same way every governor does. Choose men who are good, who have made judges over 1,000, make judges over 100, over 10.
Right.
And the one over 10 can take care of the little things.
Right. And it just, so... Yeah, if it gets to you, it's a big deal. And Moses, you need to go to God and figure out how to solve the big deal. But this little thing down here between two guys, you don't need to be dealing with that one. Set up a guy that's over 10 or 100 or, you know, set up a guy. Those people can deal with it. If they can't, it'll go up to the next guy. He can deal with it. Eventually, if it gets to you, that's a big deal. You need to take care of it. So Jethro tells him, you need to set up a system of delegation so that this will work for you.
Much like what we have in our judicial system today, where you start out at the lower court, and once they make a determination that there's something needs to go to the higher court, they send it that way. But what he's saying to Moses is, you let them handle the lower pieces, and as you said, when it comes to the really important piece, it will come to you.
Right.
But let them do these things, and part of it, there's a part that also trains them how to be leaders.
Exactly.
And
right.
You can't do it all. You're 80 years old. And
yep.
At this point in your life, you need to step out and distribute some
right.
of this responsibility.
And you see God's providential instruction in this through Jethro, because if he's going to have a great nation, and eventually they're going to occupy the land, and in essence scatter throughout the land, they need to have a system in place. And so, you know, again, it's all part of God's plan to set all this up and put it in place. So when he gives them the land, well, we know that eventually it's going to be 40 years later, but when they get the land, there's a system in place. And you, and right now, Moses, you're leading the people and you cannot do it all. You cannot physically do it all. So you need to delegate this down, and then when it reaches you, then you need to work on that bigger item. Yes. I think you should do this. However, make sure it's good with the Lord first before you just set something in place. Right. And we see that it is, and that it is good, and then he does do that. And so he does start that whole process of delegation. Pretty interesting. True.
Is there any indication of what a priest of Midian, where that would come from, or what his role would be?
I did not try to look up or take time to look up a priest of Midian, so I can't answer that right now. I think we'd have to look that up. But some of the pieces we do know is that, you know, Jethro is related. Okay, we've got that figured out. We know that he's, you know, follows Jehovah, and, you know, that he does believe in all that. But the part where it says priest of Midian, I didn't check that out. So has anybody else looked at that before? A priest of Midian? Because that's the title or name or something that's given to him here. Right. Right. So there's some structure there too. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know the answer to that, but we'll have to maybe study up on that and see if we can come up with an answer. Priest of Midian. Any other thoughts, questions? They're reunited. Moses is now delegating. It's, you know, seems like things are going to work out pretty good. And they're traveling down to Sinai. So that brings us into chapter 19. And in the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt. So verse 1 of 19. It's been 3 months now. So 3 months have transpired, and they've gone through the Red Sea. They've, you know, grumbled. They've fought with the Amalekites. Jethro has met up with them, and so they are. It's now 3 months later, and they enter into the wilderness of Sinai. And then in verse 3, Moses goes up to God. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel." So now they are there, and Moses goes up to receive instruction from Jehovah. So he delivers instructions and a lot of stuff concerning, in essence, if you think about it, one of the things I want to talk about, I want to kind of skip chapter 19 mostly here, and I want to get into chapter 20. So this is a good segue into chapter 20. That the first thing I want to talk about in chapter 20 is the law that, you know, we call it the law of Moses. You know, the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, but it's more than just the Ten Commandments. It's the law. God is making a covenant with the people, right? This is going to be a new covenant. It's a covenant with the children of Israel. And in chapter 19, it's almost as if, you know, in one regard, if you look at some of the instruction that he gives through Moses to the children of Israel, he's getting them ready for a meeting. Okay. I liken it to some of, you know, business meetings or something. You have to prep and get ready for a meeting with the client, the boss, the, you know, whatever, you know, in business. And that's kind of what some of the things that he's doing in chapter 19. You're going to consecrate yourselves. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do this. You're going to get ready because there is a meeting between you and God. And that's coming up, and you need to be ready for it, because this meeting is all about striking an agreement, striking a covenant, setting a covenant in place, okay? And that's what they're doing here. That's what God's doing is in chapter 19 with some other things. He's, you know, getting them ready for this business meeting, for this transaction, for this. We're going to get together, and there's God and the children of Israel, and there is going to be a covenant put in place. Now, in business, for us, here on the planet, if we're going to make an agreement between two parties, we, you know, negotiate. You know, we put this in the agreement, they put this in the agreement, we talk about this in the agreement, we meddle when we play, and we dink around with it, and eventually it comes up with an agreement. That's not the way this agreement is set up. This is a one-sided agreement, if you will. God is going to dictate what is in the covenant. He's going to say, this is what's in the covenant. Will you agree to it? Okay? So it's a bit different. The analogy starts to fall apart pretty quick. But he's preparing the children of Israel for a meeting with himself so that he can deliver the covenant. So, the covenant. What... I'm not exactly sure how to ask these questions as far as, you know, to lead a discussion. But I want to talk about the covenant. I want to talk about the Ten Commandments a little bit later. But I want to talk about the covenant. Why this agreement? Why this covenant? Why this, what's it like? What, you know, is it similar to anything? Is it, you know, what's it all about? Why is God doing this? Like I said, I was struggling last night to come up with how to ask these questions, but right.
Say it's dictated by God.
Okay.
And it's up to us to decide what we're going to accept.
Right, if we're going to accept it or not.
Right. And the critical question is, are we going to make that promise to God, because that's what it boils down to.
Yes.
They all agreed to do that.
That's a part of this, isn't it?
Promise to God.
Right.
And you can liken that to a Christian who expresses his belief in Jesus Christ, and he says, I believe.
Right.
And that is another covenant. That's the new covenant.
Correct.
And when we break that, we have broken our promise.
Right. So God is setting up a covenant, an agreement. Children of Israel have to agree to it. He has set one up for us, and we have to agree to it. Yes, exactly. And in olden days, as in today, you know, there are certain ways that you agree to that. Right? For us, if there's a contract, if there's an agreement in business or what have you, both parties sign. You sign. Right? You just sign the agreement. You sign the contract. You sign, you know, sign on that line. Well, they had to agree too. And there was a way they had to agree also. Okay? Other things about this covenant, its form or what have you. Okay? Yes. Yes, precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Make the comparison. Right.
So the way that they're going to conduct themselves under these codes is the separation and it's holy towards God. And if they break it, it breaks the relationship.
Right. So within this agreement, within this covenant, within this contract, this is what you need to do. So there's rules, there's guidelines, there's pieces in here. And then there's also the other side of that. If you breach the covenant, if you break it, here's what happens, right? So the positive and the negative, if you will. Yes, make the comparison to us. Right. Yep, exactly. Make the comparison to our contract, to our covenant. Right. It's the same thing. God has said it. This is what it's going to be. We agree to abide by it. If we break it, We are separating ourselves from that contract, and there are consequences to that, just as there was consequences to theirs when they break it.
This is a real shift in the relationship between human and God.
Yes, indeed.
Previously, he spoke to the fathers. Now it is he is assigning a covenant that is for the people. He's identifying more for the promise that he has given to Adam,
yep,
to Abraham, to
yep,
Jacob, that, okay, you are a special people.
Yep.
Now he is even more specifically determining you are a specific people because you are entering into a covenant or a contract with me that you agree you're going to do these things. And as time goes on, we see with Moses, we see with Joshua, we see with others, a reminder period of, okay, you said you would do this.
Right.
You said you would live according to the covenant that you have made with God. And so we see Moses
right,
reminding, we see Joshua.
They're reminded of the restrictions.
Reminding, you have said, this is what God said. He kept his promise.
Yep.
You need to keep yours.
Right.
And so it's a shift in that relationship between mm-hmm, mankind and between God.
Right.
Now I'm giving you a more specific way to live. Before it was men were determined on their own.
Right.
Now God is saying, okay, I am going to determine what you have to do and you're going to agree to it.
And you can look at it kind of like in stages, like you said. I mean, God is dealing with the patriarchs. He's dealing with the head of the house. And that encompasses a certain amount of people. Right? And then, but now he's dealing with a covenant because there's a whole lot more people. He's not going to talk to each of the heads of the house of the nation of Israel. He is codifying his law. And he's setting it up for everybody. Here it is. You all abide by the same code. Here it is. And then when you get to us, in essence, worldwide, it's the same thing. It's a new covenant, not the old covenant. But it's to all of us. And he's not talking to just the heads of the father, you know, the patriarchs of each household all over the entire planet. You know, he has, through Jesus, set his code. This is what we agree to. Yeah. It's a completely different arrangement now, but the same, but completely different. And it's written down.
Well, even then, too, as it comes along, the people are uncomfortable. With speaking with God.
Yeah.
And they ask, and they not even ask, Moses, you talk to God, and then you
tell us what he says. Yeah.
But it's still, because it goes back to that principle that we see in Hebrews 10, where it says it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the Almighty God. And here it's a time when you see the people express it.
Right.
We're not comfortable speaking to God directly.
Right. Moses, you go talk to Jehovah, and then you come tell us what he says. Yes.
That is a covenant.
Yes, it's part of the covenant he creates for them.
And when Jesus came, did the covenant change?
Yes.
How did it change?
In lots of different ways, but a lot of the same are the same.
Right.
Okay, so there are, and we'll talk about this when we actually talk about the Ten Commandments shortly, but in essence, the spiritual essence of the Ten Commandments is completely reiterated in the New Testament, and some of it verbatim and some not. But there are pieces that don't carry over, sacrifices, you know, honoring the Sabbath, things like that don't carry over. But we're in a new covenant, a spiritual covenant, a covenant of the heart, not based on physical actions. So there's all kinds of things that are different. But there are some things that carry over. So, but here, God is striking this covenant. What about its format? Did you think about that before? What about its format? I mean, typically we talk about the Ten Commandments. But that's just a part of the agreement. Have you thought about its format? God is actually following a very typical format that was in place for people in the world at that time. As they would do contracts, in essence, between each other. Okay, he is setting a covenant, he's setting an agreement, and he's following a format, actually, when he sets this out. I don't know if you'd ever thought about that before. If you go to chapter 20, and you look at verse 1 and 2, and God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. Okay, so in the first two verses, He's basically setting up a small, brief, little historical introduction that explains how the two parties have come to enter into this agreement. Okay? Now, of course, if we're looking at a business contract today, that first paragraph is a lot more than two sentences. But, you know, that's all God put in there for now, was just saying, you know, I'm the Lord your God. I brought you out of the land of Egypt. I brought you out of bondage, okay? So he is actually being very clear on the arrangement on this contract. I did this. You're going to have to agree to it. I did this. So he's setting up a historical introduction to the covenant, to the contract, okay? And the new covenant.
New, but kind of what you're saying there in chapter 8 in verse 5, it's talking about Moses and the instruction given to build the tabernacle.
Coming up.
And he says, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. So covenant was expected to be made.
Yep.
All things.
All of it. Every piece of it.
According to the pattern.
Yep.
And we have a pattern today. We just, and we must honor that.
And it's the same concept. Honor all portions of this covenant. Our new covenant. Yeah. The concept is still just as valid as this one that he's making with children of Israel through Moses. In essence then, when you get to verse 3... all the way actually through chapter 23, you actually have then the terms of the agreement. Okay? So here's my introduction to this covenant, this contract. Here's all the terms of the contract. Here's the terms of the agreement. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt honor your father. You know, here's the terms of the agreement. And the Ten Commandments are just a portion of the terms of the agreement. Okay? When you get into, the end of chapter 20, he speaks about simplicity and modesty in worship. Chapter 21, fair treatment of servants. Laws regarding violence. Laws concerning bodily injuries. 22, laws dealing with property. Exercising moral sensitivity in chapter 22. Chapter 23, fairness. Also in chapter 23, he sets up the three primary sacred feasts. The promises of God's presence. Okay, so he sets up a whole lot more in this contract than just the Ten Commandments. Okay, so he sets up the terms of the agreement. This is what you're going to abide by. And as Al pointed out, all of it. You can't neglect a piece of it. All of this you are agreeing to. And that was the first bell, so I'm running out of time and I want to get through this part. In chapter 24... Verse 4, in every agreement, there was witnesses. Okay? I'm a witness to this agreement that you have made between these two parties. So 24 verse 4, and Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. And he rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And so these pillars of stone are testifying that the agreement has been made. When you get to verse 7 of chapter 24, then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people, and they said, all that the Lord has said we will do and be obedient. So chapter 24, verse 7, just in this model contract format, there is provisions for the public reading of the contract. And so Moses read it. Here it is. And he reads to the people everything that God had just told him. And he wrote it down and he read it to the people. Okay? And in verse 8, Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, this is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. So then you get, the agreement to the covenant. And in this case, a blood oath agreement. You have all the people in verse 7, at the end of verse 7, saying, we will agree. We will be obedient. We will abide by everything you have just told us. Everything that is in the agreement, we will obey. We will abide with. And so they agree to the covenant. And then blood is sprinkled to seal the contract. Okay? We seal our contracts by signing them. Some things we are signing them, and they're recorded, documented another way. But here, you know, it is with blood being sprinkled on the people, and that is the oath and the binding of this covenant now between God and the people. Verse 11, there's also a provision for a meal to seal the covenant, and in verse 16, the safekeeping of the covenant. You got to keep it safe now. Here's the document. Now we got to keep it safe. Okay? So all of that stuff is contractual. It's all part of the contract. God is using a form and a format that they are familiar with, or should be familiar with, and he seals this contract. Now, I got very little time. Why? Why is God doing this? Why is he setting this up this way? Why did he do it this way? Why? There's the question. Why? That's an easy question and a very difficult answer. Why is he doing it? Why is he setting this up? Jerry? Okay.
In other words, what was wrong? The Ten Commandments basically said everything needed to be done, but God was defining how to honor your parents, how to treat your
right.
neighbor, how to take care of
so,
all those things by giving
right.
examples.
So one, I actually wrote down three items. And one of them is that obedience, their obedience is a response, take it further though, their obedience is a response to God's grace. Okay? God's grace, which was expressed in his actions to the Israelites in bringing them, you know, the whole Exodus and bringing them out. So obedience, he's defining that and they have to be obedient. What else? Cliff?
And then, the whole idea of the laws presented is basically
right.
Because he's going to bring Christ through the
avenue. Right. So another item is that their obedience and everything, it's all resting on unconditional principles, true, perfect principles, which are in essence an expression of God. Right. And so their obedience, you know, it's an expression of God's own character, and their obedience is there.
Hmm?
Right. And then ultimately to bring Christ through. Exactly. And then I had one other item too, as the bell has rung. Think of it from God's perspective, from his perspective, from Jehovah's perspective. He's initiating the covenant. He's signing the covenant on his end. He is committing to the children of Israel without reservation. Okay? So he is making a commitment to his people. Right? Here's the contract. You do this. This is what I am going to do for you. He is committing to his people. Okay? Holy, completely, without reservation. As long as they obey. Isn't that what he does for us? He has completely and totally committed to us. Without any reservations. As long as we obey. There's so many things that parallel. And you pull back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But anyway, think about that. Think about the covenant. Think about those things. Next week is our last class. I want to talk about the Ten Commandments for a little bit, the rest of the law. So thank you all. We'll see you next week.